Stewart, and welcome back to For Real. I'm your host, Kim Stewart, and I am happy to report that today's guest is Jeannie Stevens. Jeannie is a fellow Midwest girl, a Chicago girl, where she lives with her family and co-pastors the Soul City Church in Chicago. You know that I only chat with folks who will be real with us, and let me just say that Jeannie fits that bill perfectly. Her new book, What's Here Now?, is like a litmus test for real life and how to really flourish in the right here, right now. I'm so excited for you to hear my conversation with the kind, smart, and compassionate Jeannie Stevens. Jeannie Stevens, welcome to For Real. I am so excited that you're here.
Oh, I am so grateful to be here. This is something that I have looked forward to for a really long time. So thanks for having me.
I feel like we know so many of the same people. And here is the resounding vote every time I would mention your name in the last 6 months. What? Jeannie Stevens? She is phenomenal. Do you get to talk to her? This is how people react to your name. Did you know that? That's you in the wild.
That's me in the wild. Well, I'm glad because it could be something else.
It could be something else.
So I will take that. That is so kind.
We were just talking right before we started recording. We were talking about how you're in the beautiful space in your home above the garage. Just beautiful for our YouTubers. They'll be able to see, but there's nothing dirty in your house. I said, where are all the like empty deodorant canisters or socks? And you said it's just a matter of location, that does happen, just not in that specific spot.
This is all optics, Kimberly. Okay. This is all optics behind us here. If I were to literally walk about 10 feet from the garage to the house, I could get you all those deodorant cans, all those dirty socks. If I were to walk you into my two high schoolers' bedrooms right now, it would be a scene. It would be a scene. And we're post homecoming this weekend. Oh. So it was a real scene around here.
Yeah. No, I feel the need to point that out to our listeners because sometimes I wonder if they're confused because we have same, by the way, I have the camera turned this way for a very specific reason. And that's because everything on that direction is really quite a hot mess. And the dog is kenneled and I have breakfast dishes in the sink. And so I just want people to know, I love that you said it. Optics. We're looking at optics.
Optics. Here. Optics. Yes. The dogs are running around over at the house right now. The dishes are in the sink. So same.
Okay, good. Jeannie, you do so many beautiful things. And instead of me saying them, I would love to hear a couple things. Where you are, with whom you spend your days, and how you spend your days.
Yeah. So I'm right outside of Chicago, a town called River Forest. Oak Park River Forest is the way that it's described. And we are about 20 minutes outside of downtown Chicago, which is where we have lived for the last 12 years. We just moved out here during the pandemic.
Great time to move.
Great time to move and renovate a house at the same time.
Sure.
So, and write a book. Just bring on all the challenges, right?
You just needed like an extra pregnancy and maybe grief. Put it all together at the same time.
Totally. So, so that's the community where we live. And my husband and I co-pastor a church that we started together 12 years ago in our living room. And we started that church when our kids, Elijah and Gigi, Elijah is our 16-year-old, and he was 4 at the time. And our daughter Gigi was 2 at the time. And so now he's a 16-year-old junior in high school and she is a freshman, 14 years old. So our life is full. We just got done with homecoming, as I mentioned. But so many people said to me that they were afraid of these adolescent years and I am loving them. I feel incredibly challenged. I feel like most days, I don't know what I'm doing, but I will say it is so energizing to see these people that I love becoming their own selves, you know, becoming the versions of who God created them to be and figuring it out, the highs, the lows, and everything in between. So it is emotionally a ride, I was physically exhausted when my kids were little. Now I'm emotionally tired.
Yeah,
but I am loving it. I'm loving this season.
I'm so glad you said that out loud. I find myself saying that to young moms on a fairly frequent basis. Yeah. Because all you hear is naysaying when your kids are little, like, wait till they're teenagers, grr. And people look depressed and angry and have dark circles. I think I do have the dark circles. I'm grateful for concealer. But I completely agree. There's some like undercurrent of joy in just being more of a coach and observer.
Yeah.
Not that we don't have some hot moments around here, but we have three teenagers as well. And I am loving this stage. So young moms, young dads, who are listening, listen, there is so much fun around the bend. You will be tired in a way that you cannot remember. You will long for days where you could just maybe pop in a little Elmo and have a moment. Right. But still, I really love it too. I'm same. So here's the thing, Jeannie. You have a couple things happening. You just mentioned them. And yet you wrote a book. And I have some questions about this. First of all, I loved this book. Here it is. I'm holding it up, YouTube people. What's Here Now? The subtitle is How to Stop Rehashing the Past and Rehearsing the Future and Start Receiving the Present. I want you to know, before we even dive in, that I said I'm in a phase of my life where I'm reading a lot of books for a lot of different reasons. And this one hit me where I lived. And I talked to my husband about it later and said, there's something about the drumbeat of this book that just would not let me go. I stayed up too late. I read too long, multiple nights. And I think that you are onto something really beautiful. So first of all, kudos for writing it. Thank you for writing it. But I want to ask you, what in the world made you do it? Because you have enough going on, right? You've pastored long enough. You've seen a lot of people come and go with their books, come and go. And you probably, I don't know, maybe had some feelings about writing. But why? Why would you take the time to write this book?
Yeah, I love your question. But first, let me say thank you. Those are such kind words. And I loved your description that the beat of this drum wouldn't let you go. And I think that is more not just the words of this book. That is the draw of living in the present moment, that God is always inviting us back to what is instead of living in what was or all of the what ifs. And that is the constant beating of the drum. Come back to what's here. Come back to where your feet are planted. Come back to what's going on in this now moment instead of all of the things you're worried about in the future or all the things that you actually can't control from the past. Come back to this now moment. So I love that you felt that beat. And, you know, the honest truth is this book wrote me before I wrote it. It was just gnawing at my heart, gnawing at my soul, gnawing at my thoughts, my relationships. And I knew that the tension as to how I was living for far too many years was that I was here, but not really here. I was like in my physical location, but not really here. In my mind, I was, you know, trying to rehash everything that maybe happened 2 minutes ago, 2 weeks ago, 2 years ago, or I was out in the future rehearsing all the things that were going to happen in 2 minutes, 2 weeks, or 2 years. And it was keeping me from the kind of relationships with myself, with God, and with the people that I most love, that I long to be present with. It was keeping me from presence. And I was not here. I was like physically in the vicinity, but not really here. And I think it's funny that people have even come up with like terms for this. Like we call it FOMO, right? That there's a there that we would rather be in, you know, the fear of missing out. And we even like describe these types of things like, oh, I have FOMO. I want to be somewhere else than the place where I'm at. And I realized, you know, like when you go to the mall or the airport and it has that little red dot, like you are here. I realized for myself that I could not get to where I wanted to be if I did not figure out where I actually was. And my present location was here, there, and everywhere. I mean, it was undescript. And so I knew that I needed to pull in and start practicing the gift of being in this now moment, in the present. And I think what I realized is that the thing that most people long for is peace. I bet you want some peace in your life, right? I bet the people that are listening right now want peace in their life. I knew I did. And I began to realize that we'll never experience the peace of God if we don't learn how to live in the present with God. It's unattainable to get peace if we can't practice presence. God's zip code is right here. You know, it's in this moment. And so many of us think like, oh, I got to go somewhere else to find God. But God is always here. God has no problem with being present with us. We're the ones that don't come into the presence of God. And so I just knew I needed to start to practice presence in order to actually experience peace in my life. Mm.
Well, here's the problem, Jeannie. What you just said is exactly the problem I had with the book, which is there's so much there. What I appreciate about this book, and even how you're speaking now, is that you take these big concepts, but you make them practical to me. Mm. I have heard all my life. I mean, you can buy a coffee mug with "be in the present." Are you in the present? Embrace the present, right? But, and that sounds lovely, but what in the world does a girl do with that?
So, and how do you do it?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. And I want to dive into some of the things that you'd suggest. But I wonder, you know, you have these three frameworks or three paradigms, I guess, in the book of the past, the present, and the future, that we spend a lot of times replaying the past, we rehearse the future, and really we want to receive the present. And I wonder if for you personally, is there one of those first, you know, is there a past or future leaning that you do one more than the other? Because I think I'm a future rehearser. I just spend a lot of time thinking about what's next. How about you?
Yes, I'm the same. This is probably why we have a kindredness already, because I am all about the future, and I'm an ideator. I am a visionary. I love checklists, thinking about things that, you know, I'm going to get done, and dreaming about all that is ahead. And there's nothing wrong with that. There is nothing wrong with that. Having a healthy plan for your future is actually a great thing. Having vision for your future is a great thing. The problem is when you use the future to avoid the present. And so many of us, we are using the future as a way to avoid what is occurring in the here and the now. So I have found that, you know, when I first set out to write the book, I realized, okay, there's these ways that we rehash the past, and there's these ways that we rehearse the future, and they're pretty common to most people. They're kind of some consistent telltale signs to give us almost like breadcrumbs, like, oh, I'm going down the path of rehashing something that's already happened, or, oh, I'm going down the path of rehearsing something that, you know, hasn't yet happened. And as I noticed those signs in my life, as I noticed those breadcrumbs in my life, I realized I think all of us have these. And so it wasn't just, you know, me figuring out how to be present. That's where it really became one of those things where I was like, I think this is a good gift to offer to others to help them potentially pay attention to where are they rehashing and rehearsing. And like you said, most of us, we tend towards one or the other. You know, we tend towards either living out in the future or going back to the past as a way to avoid some of the things that God may want us to face in the present. And I often like to share with people and share with myself that we cannot change what we cannot face. There's no way that we will be able to change or transform the things that we want to change and transform in our lives if we're unwilling to face those things, if we're unwilling to bring healthy awareness and then acceptance of what is. And so much of that work we try to do in the past or the future, but it can only be done in the present. We can only name those things, accept those things, and then participate in the changing of those things in this now moment. And so helping people learn how to pay attention to, all right, these are the ways that I rehash the past, and these are the ways that I rehearse the future, really being able to notice it in our lives. You know, one of the ways that we rehash the past is blame. And most people would be walking around going like, well, I don't have a problem with blame. Like that's not my thing. And yet I would say, is there any place in your life where maybe there's a problem or there's a challenge and you're wanting to put that problem on someone or something else? Because if that's the case, then perhaps blame may have a role in your life. My husband and I were working with this new marriage therapist who's awesome. Her name is Joy. And our very first session, we were doing it on Zoom, kind of like this. And Joy said, I'd like you guys to turn and face one another. And I was like, okay. So we turn and face our stools and we're looking at one another. And she said, okay, what I would like you to do now is I'd love for you to share how you are bringing disconnection to your relationship. Like each, you can go back and forth. How you're each bringing disconnection to your relationship.
I was okay.
Like, Joy, the counselor, I have a problem because what I would like to do is I would actually like to go first and I would like to tell Jarrett
how he is
bringing disconnection to our relationship.
Can we start there,
and
Joy?
Let's start there, Joy, the counselor. And Joy was like, yeah, that I believe that is what you want to do. And I'm going to have you do this instead. And so, you know,
it's such a knee jerk, right? It is such a knee jerk. Even after reading that section in the book, I started listening differently in our house and among the siblings and my own darn self, just immediately going to, well, the reason that happened is you. And I never, ever would have used that word. I wouldn't have said, I really have an issue with blame. I just gussy it up with different language.
Right. Totally. And it was hilarious though, as Jarrett and I went back and forth and we were owning the ways, owning, taking responsibility, bringing authentic vulnerability to one another. I watched blame melt in our relationship. And, you know, this is just one of the ways that if we keep blame at work in our relationship, it's going to keep us from the present moment. It's going to keep me from being able to actually connect with Jarrett. If I'm holding something in the past over, you know, a story maybe that I even have in my mind, like, well, if he did this, then we wouldn't have this. It's a way that we rehash the past and keep us from the present. So I have these five ways we rehash and these five ways that we rehearse. And they're just ways for us to notice, pay attention to how we're not in the present, and then to come back to this now moment.
I think that's the humdinger, the idea of paying attention. I thought I was doing this, Jeannie.
Right.
I am not. I'm not for sure. I mean, very seldom in my weekly or daily discipline am I fully rooted in where I am. And, you know, there are beautiful things about remembering, right? I mean, I've been thinking a lot about that lately because I don't have a natural predilection to looking behind. And so I've been trying to pay attention to that a little bit. There's a beautiful thing about remembering what God has done and the faithfulness of God and where we've been and where he's taken us. And there's also a beautiful thing, as you say, of having a vision and looking forward. But boy, do I miss out on a big chunk of the middle, which is right now, this moment. And when you talk about how, I love how you frame that in the book. And I also love that you give us specific things to be looking for. So for example, blame, you talk about worry, that's more towards the future. And I'd love for you to talk about that a little bit because I didn't think I was a worrier. I don't think I am, but you write in the book about how you, during the night, sometimes that you have this wonderful ability to sleep anywhere, but that you were waking up and spinning and you hit me where I am actually living, that I have just a lot going on right now. And I find that I fall asleep and then I wake up and then that's a problem because my brain kicks on and I have to solve every problem of the world between the hours where no one's awake. And so you have very practical advice in terms of how to deal with that. And I would love for you to coach us on that. You talk about turning down the volume, just such a great idea. Tell me more.
Yeah. Well, you know, worry, the way that I describe worry is that it's living in a not yet that's worse than your now. Mm-hmm. That the very experience of worry is we create a fictional reality that's worse than our factual reality.
That's it.
A not yet that's worse than my now. I'm not living in it right now. And the funny thing is that if it's not happening now, it's not happening. But most of us are living in our not happenings and we're worrying, right? And so what I began to realize, you share that story that I wrote about in the book. And I was just mentally, like literally living a gymnastics routine in my mind over and over and over, the flip-flops, the back handsprings, that, you know, and just turning everything over in my mind.
And to be clear, you are an optimist, as am I. Glasses definitely half full. So
overflowing.
I'm not a hand wringer. I'm not a furrowed brow kind of girl. And I feel like maybe it's my body at night, the only time I'm quiet. This is what you're fussing over.
Yeah.
So you felt the same.
Absolutely. Felt the same. And the power about your body is that the body is incapable of telling a lie, right? And so the body holds all of these things, even if we're not speaking them, allowing them to be released from our body is holding them. And what I began to realize is that as I was, you know, playing all of these things over and over and over in my mind, it was starting to show up in my body. It was starting to show up in my sleep. It was starting to show up in the ways that I was holding stress. I would notice it because my shoulders were always down instead of like pulled back and confident and like, all is well, right? My shoulders were telling a story that all was not well in my body. And what I realized is that I had the volume up all the way at a 10 on everything. The volume up for me was in a few different areas. One, I was not honoring any boundaries with people. I was offering myself way too often to the needs of others. And so I was forgetting that no is a complete sentence. I was forgetting that it is actually really healthy to say no. It's really healthy to have rhythm in how I do my relationships. And I just was, and it wasn't that I was just like, yes to everybody, but it was kind of leaky. You know, it was like, oh, sure. Yeah. I don't want to disappoint you. So yeah, I'll say yes to that. But in the saying yes to that, I was saying no to myself. So that was a big one. No boundaries in relationships, unfiltering, not having any filter on my, input. Mm-hmm. And so I had no, this little device was my boss.
She's holding her phone.
It was my boss.
Right.
And I was letting it dictate how I lived my life versus me say to my phone or to my calendar or to my inbox or to the people that I, you know, have on our team and I employ or, you know, or even the people that I deeply love and care about, my family. I was just taking all of the unfiltered content coming at me, all of the news, all of the social media, all of the things that were going on in the world. And I was just letting my device decide when I needed to receive those things versus when I decided to receive those things. So every notification popped up, you know, and it takes me out of the present moment. Oh, this person just texted. Oh, they need some. Oh, it takes me out of the present moment. And so I had to really shift in some pretty excessive ways in how I shifted my relationship with my phone and with content that was coming in. So it was the excessive unfiltered input. It was the unboundaried relationships. And then the final thing for me, Kimberly, was just I was living at a pace that was not a human pace. I was a human doer more than I was a human beer.
Right.
And being was not something that I practiced, but doing was something that I was trying to win a gold medal at. And, you know, I find it so interesting that the scriptures say, be still and know that I am God. Everything about my life was not still.
Right.
And therefore I was unable to actually know where God was being God in my life.
Okay. Now that's something that's okay. I have not viewed that verse through that lens before, but stillness has to happen, right?
It has to happen. And so to turn the volume down, you know, you can just look at the life of Jesus. He practiced slowness, he practiced silence, and he practiced solitude. It was literally his way of, I believe, taking whatever were the pressures of pace. He's the Son of God.
Yeah.
You think he has a few things to accomplish?
People right? wanted some things from him.
People yeah. wanted some things yeah. from him. You know, he had to put some boundaries on his relationships. There was a lot coming at him. So these things that, you know, keep the volume up in our lives, it's nothing that Jesus didn't experience. And his response to it was slowness, silence, and solitude over and over and over again. And I think when I first started, coming to terms with the fact that, wow, I never thought of myself as a worrier, but I am living in a lot of not yets that are worse than my now. Why is this? And I noticed the volume was so high. I had to regularly participate in turning the volume down. You know, it's not just one of those things like, oh, Lord, would you help me stop right. worrying?
Right.
You know, and Jesus was like, I'd love to help you stop worrying.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to do some things about
right.
that. Like, you need to be a participant in this practice. And so, you know, I think in some ways I wanted to put it on my to-do list one time and check the box, and then it was over and done with. Never worry again. Never have high volume. It's a practice. It's a practice. I have to do it over and over and over again. I had to do it this morning. I was feeling some anxiety about some decisions that I'm making. They felt heavy. They felt hard. I didn't want to make them. And I found myself going off into, you know, rehearsing the future and living in a not yet that's worse than my now, and creating all kinds of stories that could come from these decisions. I just had to come back into this now moment and go, okay, what's here now? What's true about this moment now? You know, what am I sensing in my body? What am I feeling in my heart? What am I thinking in my mind? And just come back into the present moment. Actually practice this moment. Decide, where am I going to put some slowness into my day? Where am I going to practice some silence right now? How can I have some solitude? I can go on a walk for 20 minutes that no one needs me during those moments. I can do that. It's not like I have to go off into the hills and, you know, check into a retreat
for 40 days.
For 40 days, right? Right. Sometimes it's just, mom's going to go on a walk for 20 minutes. I'll see you in a few minutes. I'm going to be much better when I come back. And it's a gift to ourselves, and it's a gift to our people when we do that.
Right. Yes, yes, and amen. For me personally, I want you to know that what you have written and how you modeled that, that's making a difference in my sleeping. Mm. I mean, I have noticed if I get up and my brain starts going, I've tried all sorts of things over the years, and I actually sleep really well typically, but I know that when I have too much on my plate, my body, it's like it has too much of a hard time slowing down at night. My grandmother used to go alphabetically with Bible verses. She'd start with A and start reciting to herself when she couldn't fall asleep. And she said, I usually got to about P. I mean, I'm not that woman. First of all, that revs up my brain too much. So
right?
that does not work for me. But I have been thinking about what you have said and instead saying, well, what do I know? I know that instead of trying to fix all the things, what do we know for sure? What's here right now? And what's here right now is that God has 100% track record of giving me everything I need.
Yes.
I have enough time, actually.
Yes.
I have enough wherewithal. I have the things I need to take the next baby step.
Yeah.
And that makes all the difference. So
it does.
Thank you for writing that section, because it's really important to me.
Oh, I'm so glad. That's encouraging to hear.
Hi, folks. Just a quick interruption here to let you know about another podcast you might enjoy. My friend Bob Goff and I host The Writing Room, a place where authors talk shop. Whether you are a writer yourself, or you're just curious about how in the world an idea ends up with a barcode, The Writing Room is a place where we talk about all things books. Neither Bob nor I are really into secrets, so we pull back the curtain on how we go about writing and how to have some fun along the way. We would love for you to join us on the adventure. The Writing Room is available on all your favorite streaming platforms and airs nationally on KLove Radio. And now, back to the conversation.
You have another way that you kind of unravel how we avoid the present, and it's specific to grief. So you really encourage us to grieve well. And our family's just in a season of grief and loss right now. And so my antenna were up for that. And you say that there is a difference between giving in to grief or going into grief, and that we want to go in, but not give in. And you've experienced grief in your own life. So coach us just for a little bit. I know this would be an entire podcast, but I would love to hear a little bit about how we don't get mired, but that we also can honor our grief and our loss.
Yeah. I love that you, described it as an honoring of grief, because we need to hold the grief with some sobriety, with some, a real sense of all change is a loss, and all loss changes us. And if we don't hold that in a healthy way, we won't be able to see the fruit that is meant to come from grief. And as you mentioned, you know, you're navigating through some grief. We as well as a family have, over the last few years, had some very unexpected losses in our family. And, you know, the interesting thing about grief is no one ever goes looking for grief. No one ever tries to get in the line of grief.
Right. Like,
me next. Right. I need some more grief in my life because it's going to grow some things in me.
Right.
This is not a thing that we intentionally pursue, but it is a thing that every one of us will face. Every one of us. And especially in the last 2.5 years, I don't know if there is a person walking the planet that isn't holding some loss, that isn't holding some way in which life has changed, and change, it evokes loss in us. And it requires that we do the good, healthy work so that something can grow through it. And when I talk about giving into grief, you know, it's almost like when you go to the ocean and you're playing in the waves, and one comes and it's just so big that it just knocks you down, right? Oftentimes, I think grief feels like that wave. Like it comes, it feels so unexpected, like, whoa, I did not think this was going to be this big. And it knocks us down. And I'll never forget when I was first learning how to body surf and you know, like actually ride the waves. I remember the person that was instructing me, he's like, no, you have to go with the wave. What I have found is that if we hold our ungrieved losses in our life, if we just let the wave knock us over, usually what comes is some kind of chronic complaining. It's this sense that, you know, loss needs someplace to go. And when we don't allow it to go somewhere, it's going to come out in our complaining, and it's going to become chronic. And that's one of the telltale signs that there is a grief that we have not walked through, chronic complaining. Another is a guarded heart. Oftentimes, when we just give in to the grief, we're so afraid that it's going to happen again, that we armor up our hearts so much, and we guard them so much that we don't let anyone or anything in that we fear we could lose again. Resentment is another one. You know, when loss remains in our life and we don't do the work to move through it, resentment grows. Isolation is another one. You know, there's this sense that, that feels too hard, too difficult, too painful. And I don't ever want that to happen again. So I'm going to isolate myself and make sure that I don't experience this kind of pain again. So I'm going to just stay here, just me, let nobody else in. And then we repress our emotions. And an emotion is just energy in motion, and it needs someplace to go. Emotions need to be felt. They don't actually need to be given answers. They need to be felt in a healthy way. And when we repress our emotions, we deny them the one thing that they want, healthy space. And so those are the signs of ungrieved loss in our life. But when we actually grow through our losses, like when we go into that wave of grief, we actually over time can develop a peaceful appreciation for what it is that we are navigating. You know, some of the losses in my life, I lost my brother at a very young age. I lost my dad at a very young age. And while I would never, ever, ever, if I were the solo writer of my story, I would never write that into the plot line. But this side of those losses, I have a peaceful appreciation for what God has done through those losses. God has developed so much in me through those losses, and I can hold the loss with peaceful appreciation. It's opened my heart to other people that are navigating loss. It has brought a quality of contentment into my life. And I'm a big old control freak, Kimberly. I love to control things. And I mean, there is nothing like the realization that you really are out of control. And then learning how to express my emotions. You know, I feel like I was driving my daughter to volleyball this, you know, to an early morning volleyball thing today. And she's got a big game today. And I could tell she was feeling some nerves about it. And I was like, hey, baby, how's it going? She's like, I'm fine. I'm like, fine?
Did you read my chapter on emotions? Because
I'd like to bring you the feeling wheel right now, right? But I just thought, you know, so many of us that is our first intuition. I'm fine.
Let's talk about that, because you're actually dovetailing right into my next question. And I don't know if this is just a Midwestern woman thing. I think we have this nailed, this stuffing of our emotions.
Yes, yes,
everything's
yes.
fine. I just need to be plucky
right.
and move through and make it better. And it's not just with grief. I think we do this elsewhere, and you do this masterful job of kind of unpacking how, just as you said, an emotion needs to go somewhere. And that's a healthy thing. Somehow in the church, we got real wonky about this, that emotion is an undesirable weakness, right? Or that there, it's just something that you need to move aside emotion so that you can remember the truth. And while I do believe, I mean, again, I live with three teenagers, I do believe that sometimes emotions are maybe not super truthful to us. They can kind of get a little wonky, but I love your approach that when I'm feeling sad, I can say I'm feeling sad. I'm not sad. I am. Yeah. This is not an identity moment. Yes. This is, I need to move through this and acknowledge this. You have this great story about you and your husband, Jarrett. And this is kind of going into the thinking piece too, that you're having a thought, right? You're not the thought, but that's being able to acknowledge these things, I can only imagine in the car this morning with your daughter and in general, how this has probably revolutionized your family home and your friendships and your leadership to be able to encourage your own darn self to say, oh, what am I feeling? How about I just acknowledge that instead of pushing it out of the way every 3 seconds? Tell me about how that has worked and what it's done for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, in the car ride this morning, you know, I thought, oh, I know where you learned how to say I'm fine. You learned that from me. So you watched your mama model this for far too many years. And I want to launch you into the world one day, knowing that an emotion is just energy in motion. And the only thing that it's ever looked for is to be named. And then to be felt in a healthy way. And so I was like, okay, are there some more words other than fine? What are some other things that are going on? And she just really sweetly said, yeah, I'm feeling nervous. I'm feeling scared. And I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. That makes so much sense. What do you feel like that nervousness and that fear needs? And she's like, probably I need to run around and I need to just, you know, get it out of my body. And I needed to name it with you and tell you that. And I just watched, you know, and it didn't all dissipate and go away, but I was able to help her differentiate the fact that she is not fear. She is not nervousness. She's just having an emotion. She's having a feeling of nervousness and fear. And the same is true with our thoughts. You know, we think anywhere from 60 to 80,000 thoughts in a day. That's a lot of thoughts, a lot of thinking. Some neuroscientists think that that women are almost always on the higher end of that. And I would raise my hand and
say,
that would
be true. Yes.
Thanks. And, you know, the thoughts are, it's like when you go to the airport, right? And you see all the planes flying in, right? And they're landing. If you think about 60 to 80,000 thoughts overhead every single day, and if you clear every one of those thoughts for a landing, it's no wonder we're having a hard time being present, because we're feeling all these feelings that we're not naming and that we're not feeling. They're there, but we're not naming them. We're just kind of stuffing them down or denying them. No, I'm not mad. No, I'm not sad. No, I'm not angry, right? I'm fine. I'm pushing all these things down. And I'm taking 60 to 80,000 thoughts and I'm clearing every single one of them for landing on the runway of my mind. And I'm believing every single thought that I have. It's no wonder that we are struggling to actually be in this present moment. A great thinker on neuroscience and how to actually practice good mindfulness says that, her name is Katie Byron. She says, a thought is harmless until we believe it. And so many of us, we are believing every single thought we have.
I do this all the time.
Right?
I didn't know I was until you said it. But, you know, I mean, this happens in our home all the time, right? I assume things in my head and go from A to Z in 2 seconds.
Yes.
No one's helping
exactly.
me. I am
yes.
unhelped. No
right?
one's paying attention. No one sees. But then the thing I hate most in maybe all of the world is passive aggression. And I despise it with all that is in me, but it creeps up. And when someone in my home says, are you okay, mom? Yep. I'm fine. Which means, nope, I'm not. And instead I should just be a grown-up and say, you know, actually I feel totally overwhelmed today. I normally would love to do that task that you just asked me to do. I have no margin. And some of that's my fault, but I need you to help. Like, why in the world would mm-hmm. I not do that and yeah. give everybody yeah. some help around here in this kitchen?
Exactly.
So naming it, the power of naming it and feeling yes. it and then letting yes. it be what it is and not take yeah. over the whole room, right?
Yeah. And we got to catch them before we clear them for landing, you know, the scriptures say, take captive every thought. Right? Take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ. And I think many of us are letting our thoughts take us captive. We're letting our thoughts take us captive because every one of them is being cleared for landing. And we need to go, wait, is that thought true?
Right.
Is that thought helpful? Is yeah. that thought actually from God?
Yeah.
Is
All that thoughts thought- are not created equal.
They are
I act
not.
Like they are, but I love
they
that.
Are
That's
not.
So good.
They are not. And so actually learning to say, I'm not going to clear that thought for landing. I'm not going to let that take up residence here in my mind. I'm not going to let that, you know, that's some of what I was even doing this morning as I was feeling some anxiety over some decisions. And I was writing all kinds of future stories about what I thought, you know, could happen. And I just said, I'm not going to let that thought own me today.
I love it.
I'm not going to let that thought drive my day. I'm not going to give, you know, that emotion the steering wheel. I acknowledge that it's here. I name it. I respect that it's here. I respect that I'm having these thoughts and I'm not going to give them power. I'm not obedient to those thoughts and those feelings. I'm just naming them and I'm giving them the healthy space to work themselves through so that I can actually be here and present in this moment right now.
I love this, Jeannie. And I can only imagine this, the beauty of what you're talking about is that it has so many ripples. This is, you're talking about how you talk to yourself, but you just talked to your daughter. You just talked to Gigi about that this morning, I'm sure, with your husband and in your leadership at your church. I mean, this has so many beautiful potential consequences in how we relate, not just to ourselves, but to the people around us. I love it. I love what you've written. I love this book. 5 out of 5 stars, you guys. Aww, get it. What's Here Now by Jeannie Stevens. We'll have the links to everything. But before I let you go, I have to ask you a two-parter. I ask all of our guests. And because you wrote a book, I assume you have an affection for books. If this is not true, you can turn off Zoom right now. But it will be a little awkward if you do that. So I would like to hear two things. First, a book that you return to over and over recommending to people. So we're fans of the backlist around here. You know, once you've written a book and 14 minutes after it's out, publishers forget who you are. No offense to publishers, but we are fans of the backlist. So this could be a million years old, this book, but something that you hear yourself saying, oh, have you ever read? So that's part one. Part two is any book that's on your horizon that you're excited about that's coming down the pike.
Yeah. So a couple of books, gosh, I am a deep lover of books. So let me just start there.
You quote a lot of beautiful books. I actually have so many questions about those too. So yes, I could tell you love books.
I love books. I love writing. My third grade teacher, Miss Loth, was the first person that said to me, one day you're going to write a book. Oh, and I was like, what? Loth. I am? She's just so, yeah.
I hope you sent her a copy. Oh, did you? Oh, good. I did. Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah. So I've loved books. I've loved writing since I was a little girl. You know, I often come back to, I love all of Henry Nouwen's writing, but one of the books that he wrote that I come back to often is The Inner Voice of Love.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever read it.
No, not that
it
one.
It is such a gift. It's almost like being inside of his journal. It's beautiful. When it comes to leadership resilience or creativity resilience, especially anybody that's listening that is a writer, that wants to be a writer, that is pushing through all of the demons of writing, I would say Stephen Pressfield, The War of Art.
Yes. Have you read that? It's on my list, but that, actually, my friend Bob just recommended that book not too long ago.
It's so good. He wrote another one called Do the Work that is just it's a good kick in the pants around the creative process in doing that inner work as a writer, as a creator, as an innovator, as somebody that's willing to, you know, take a blank page and put something on it. There are those
insanity. What are we thinking?
It's insanity. And both of those books, I come back to them and they are good reminders to me that this work is worth it. And it requires resilience and it requires deep perseverance. Both things that I often want to be like, no, that's too hard. I don't want to do that. Can I just watch a show on Netflix? Right?
Totally. Yes, absolutely. I love it. Okay. So The War of Art and Do the Work, both by Pressfield, and the Nouwen book. Good, good. Any others that you're looking forward to that are just coming around the bend?
Yeah, my friend Sharon Miller just wrote a book called The Cost of Control, and I just picked it up. She sent it to me, and it was like sitting in a package, and I hadn't unpacked it, and I was like, oh gosh, I need to read this. So it's on my bedside, and I confess that I'm a control freak, so I need to spend some time in Sharon's book because there are some costs to my control. And I'm looking forward to reading it.
Good. I love it. We will link to all of that. You are an intrepid reader. If you already know you need to read it and do it anyway. That's pretty good. Well, Jeannie Stevens, it has been a total joy to talk with you. Thank you for writing this book. To your point, the hard work of that blank page matters because you are bringing life and freedom with your words. So thank you for doing it. Mm. It is a heck of a lot of work. And we, your readers, are grateful. So thank you.
Thank you, Kimberly. So good to be with you.
I'm telling you, Jeannie and her book are perspective shifters for me. At one point while I was reading it, I looked up after a particularly powerful sentence and I said out loud to an empty room, "Come on." It is a talk out loud while reading kind of book, and I'm so grateful for it and for Jeannie, and I hope she is my friend and compatriot for years to come. That's it for today, but don't wander off because we have more coming down the pike. And if you connected with what Jeannie had to say, will you share this episode with the folks you love? Keep the convo going, people. This life gig is only the sweeter when there are lots of seats at the table. We will keep saving one for you. For real.